Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to the Juul Network. The Juul Network is a radio frequency of continuous streaming knowledge and wisdom, which promotes and sustains the activation of the present evolutionary process of immortality and the unfolding of the God Self within the evolving planetary society presently on planet Earth. The Juul Network is committed to teaching the sciences of life and the science of living. By cultivating the mind of a scientist, you will be able to extract the very best the current century has to offer. You are listening to the Melanology Hour with your host, microbiologist, preventative medicine and hygiene physician, Dr. Juul Pulchram, MD, and biomedical researcher, physiological psychologist, and professor, Dr. Timothy Owens Moore. Join them each Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Juul Network, hosted by thejuulnetwork.net.
Well, welcome, everyone. How are you? You know, I just love that music. My little melanin granules, they just start just, you know, moving from side to side, et cetera. So when I see other people at the cars, the music is really with that really incredible undulating rhythm. Everybody's body is moving to the side. I mean, I'm really clear why. I don't know why. I'm melanin just love to do that. So welcome. Here we are. It's that special time of the month, and this is your Melanology Hour. I'm your host, Dr. Juul, and your co-host is also here with me, Dr. T. Owens Moore. Hi, Dr. Tim. How are you?
Hey, greetings. I'm percolating with you also with that music.
Yeah, so if people are wondering, well, why is nobody saying anything? It's because our melanin is actually, you know, moving and undulating in every one of our cells. So, you know, it really feels good, so you don't want to say anything. You just want to be in the moment.
It must be because our master engineer who has programmed all music too, so he must have put that in there for us, huh?
Yeah. So, well, Dr. Moore, we always love having you here. We want to thank you always for taking time out to share your wealth of knowledge with us, because we know that you have such a busy schedule. And so, you know, as usual, we stay in contact, so we've been talking earlier. And we're speaking on melatonin. But, you know, I want to just start out and just ask you a question, since you've written a lot on this. Can you tell me the relationship between sotriol and melatonin, since we talk about sotriol is the hormone for the daytime and melatonin is the hormone for the nighttime? Where does sotriol come in?
Right. Well, that's a good question. In terms of the audience to know, sotriol is a term that I really want to help to express what vitamin D is. I guess people in research have said that vitamin D is very important for our health, our immune system, our bones, and our calcium intake. But actually, vitamin D is really a steroid hormone. So the term sotriol pertains to how we look at vitamin D really as a steroid hormone, and that's the term we give. So during the daytime, you know, the sun shines, and the sun shines and it contacts the skin. So the biosynthesis of sotriol in the skin, it becomes like a calcium homeostatic steroid hormone. It comes in play to help the skin absorb the light. And it produces vitamin D, again, which is not just a vitamin, but a steroid hormone that has multiple impacts on our behavior and also our physiology. So dealing with growth, reproduction, dealing with the issue of just general health, because we know during the winter months, and that's why I want to talk about melatonin and health today, because during this time of the year is when people start getting ill, start getting sick, catching viruses and the flu. And so our bodies are constructed to fight against that. So you can also look at Soltriol as the immunomodulator to assist in making sure the body can stay healthy.
Okay, now, well, so how does Sarah come in here, serotonin, as a daytime neurotransmitter?
Well, if we go backwards to try to explain that we are organisms, entities that have a circadian rhythm. That means
right.
We respond to a 24-hour clock. So we have mechanisms in our body that allow this to happen without you even thinking about it. So in the brain, deep there in the center, is an organ called the pineal gland that is responsive to light. So in our brains is deeply receded in the middle of the brain, and we can call it a third eye because it has some of the receptors and also chemicals that are also produced there in the eyeball, specifically in the backside in the retina where you have photoreceptors. So the same kinds of cells there in the pineal gland. So European scientists for years have thought it was a vestigial organ, like it had served no purpose. So it said nothing about it, but we've known since 1958 that it produces a chemical called melatonin. Melatonin
right.
is released during the daytime. Excuse me, is released during the nighttime
right.
from the pineal gland, and during the daytime, serotonin is released. Well, you need serotonin to make melatonin in the biosynthetic pathway. So, when you deal with the whole issue of biosynthesis, without serotonin, you don't make melatonin. So it makes sense for it to be released during the daytime, so it's there to be processed by certain enzymatic pathways to be converted into melatonin at nighttime.
Okay, so Soltriol also is contributing to that process of the manifestation of melatonin for nighttime tissue regeneration and other reactions?
Well, we would put Soltriol in a class by itself because we're dealing with the issue of it being a steroid hormone. Like when people drink that milk, you know, it's milk from a cow. Is really pus, you know, from a nipple. But it put vitamin D in that milk. It's not like it's in the milk. It's fortified with vitamin D. So as it's put in there, you can then understand how just naturally if it's in from the sun and then the skin being able to synthesize it to make it for the body to use, it has multiple roles, multiple effects. So it's not so much just to affect melatonin. It has other realms of possibilities to affect our health. Melatonin on its own has multiple roles, and we can discuss that throughout the discussion this evening. But melatonin in general, name came about because it actually lightened melanocytes. That is, it made the skin lighter. And it makes sense because at nighttime, the sun is not shining. So the body is adjusting by allowing whatever light is out there to get in, so the melatonin circulates at nighttime to allow that to happen. That's just a small physiological response. But in general, melatonin can be looked at as a molecule or a component that can be assisting with keeping your body in rhythm. Like I said, since it's being secreted from the pineal gland, it's involved in jet lag. It's involved in, anytime your rhythms are thrown off because you're not sleeping properly and you've got the wrong lighting and so therefore your melatonin may be impacted, which means that then affects your mood. There's a major disorder called seasonal affective disorder or winter depression that really happens during the winter months when the sun is not shining as much anymore. And then melatonin, if there's an imbalance in a person on a natural level, then they're impacted by the moods during this winter month. So beyond the skin lightening, beyond that mood change, it also, in animals, believe it or not, melatonin inhibits reproduction. When we say inhibits, it means it stops the reproduction, and it makes sense. For breeding animals, like I guess sheep and antelope and animals that breed seasonally, well, we need to be making babies during the wintertime or they're going to die. So the body has the reproductive system shutting down, and melatonin causes that to happen. And then in the breeding season, then the melatonin is a decreased, and then the animals are then back to their seasonal breeding. So we're now looking at multiple roles that these chemicals have on behavior, and I want to just discuss the whole issue of, you know, health, because, again, this time of the year is when people are getting sick.
Right. Well, I think that, thank you so much, first of all. But I think one thing that's very, very important that you said, and you just kind of just whizzed over that, but I want people to really understand that, that cow's milk innately does not contain a high amount of vitamin D, and that that is one of the main substances that is added to milk. Cow's milk is exogenous vitamin D, which is the process that you cited as fortification. It's fortified. They add the vitamin D. It is not a natural component that we could look at milk for nutrition for that reason, and it has been marketed for scores of years to people where people innately now, again, are thinking that vitamin D is a natural source, excuse me, that milk, cow's milk is a natural source of vitamin D, which was the marketing information used to help increase the sales of cow's milk, especially after the epidemic of tuberculosis that literally was traced to cow's milk. And I think that was interesting how that was quietly handled in the society, that with the number of people who contracted tuberculosis and were separated from their families, and many of them had to be institutionalized, we don't even really know the count of numbers that really died from this or had, you know, very a lot of damage occurred to the body, structurally, bones, lungs, et cetera, because of tuberculosis, which is a natural bacterial organism amongst bovine or cows.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was how this whole idea of what pasteurization came in, which then allowed tuberculosis to really come under control because they were now controlling the natural bacteria of the tuberculin bacillus, which is a natural part of the bacterial milieu of cows in the milk.
Right. And what's deep about that for this issue of health, again, those in the audience, if you're sick, you will not drink milk when you're sick because it's a mucus builder. So right there should already be an indication that, well, why would you drink it when you're feeling all right if it builds mucus?
Well, you know, if that's a unique attribute, and it's really not understood why. It's estimated somewhere between 78% to 80% of the melanated world population cannot digest milk after about the age of 5 or 6 because of the low content of the enzyme lactase, which is necessary to break down the milk sugars. And so after 5 years old or so, which would be the time that normally most children are weaned from human breast milk, the capacity to digest milk in any form becomes a challenge. And I think it's very interesting that instead of honoring that, that now we have a huge market that is trying to obtain revenues from this natural market that cannot handle milk after the age of 5. And so, again, they've decided, the forces that be here, the agribusiness people, to fortify milk again by, again, adding the enzyme to it so that you won't have to worry about whether your stomach and your digestive tract can make enough lactase to break down the milk sugars. They've actually added it to the milk, again, which is going to create, we don't know what other kind of medical problems here or health problems because of this. We don't even know really where this lactase is coming from. They've never advertised it. Most people have done the research. They act like they're just in glee and really happy that now they can drink milk as though they were really missing something. So that's a whole side of nutrition. That's how we're looking at how the commercial industry and our food supply have really joined together to promote products that are not in alignment with the natural evolution of the body. And again, are probably creating symptoms that are yet still undiagnosed and diseases because the epidemiology of the results of the addition of these products into the food chain of individuals who for thousands of years could not even digest these foods. We have no idea what that adjustment process looks like, or adaptation process in human tissue looks like. If there's an adaptational activity occurring at all. So I just wanted to bring that out nutritionally, that was a real big vacuum that most people don't think about, that they're not recognizing what milk really can do from a cow. So we need to hear more, Dr. Moore, about melatonin. So why don't we let our sponsor speak to us very quickly, and then we'll be back to hear more about melatonin. Is that okay?
Okay.
Okay. We'll be right back after this announcement.
Well,
would you like to be smarter, more at peace in your life, less stressed? Are you searching for a greater spiritual connection? If so, what you need is access to the 90% of your brain that most of us don't even use. All of this and much more can be yours by enrolling in Dr. Jewel's Balancing Program. Dr. Jewel's Balancing Program is a revolutionary program utilizing sacred geometry to connect the logical left and creative right sides of the brain to work with what we call whole brain functionality. Many participants feel effects from day one, and in no time you can enjoy the physiological effects equal to 8 hours of meditation in as little as 15 minutes a day. Act now to start on this life-changing program and become the person you've always wanted to be. To learn more and sign up for Dr. Jewel's Balancing Program, please visit our website, www.thejewelnetwork.net. What are you waiting for? Make the move now.
Greetings, and if you're just tuning in, welcome, welcome. You're listening to the Melanology Hour with your host, Dr. Jewel. Here I am, and our co-host, Dr. Tim Owens-Moore. And we've been talking about Sotriol, melatonin, and serotonin, and we're now moving into melatonin as our prime discussion for this evening. I'd like to make an announcement, however, since this is the Jewel Network, justifiably in chatting with the Night Living, bringing you the sciences of life and living. Please note that if you haven't been notified, many of you, we've asked you to make sure that you stay abreast and stay connected with NASA and Space Weather and some other sites that are constantly giving you the updates on what's happening with the shift in the tectonic plates of Earth, as well as what's going on our sun. And again, we had some coronal mass ejections released from the sun on the Earth side, and they have now reached our atmosphere. So the warnings are out that any matter or instrumentation that is dependent upon electricity may vacillate in its function because our electromagnetic field is definitely being affected now with this CME or coronal mass ejection that's being released. So don't beat the phone down or smack on the TV, et cetera. These things may kind of spark and seem to phase in and out, and that is why. Okay. Without further ado, well, I'm sitting in my seat and I'm already Dr. Moore, so what are we talking about today in regards to melatonin?
Well, issue is during this time of the year, again, coughing, hacking, sniffles, sneezing, I mean, all that is because of rhinoviruses or just viruses circulating around. You know, I'm living two states away now from Georgia. I'm up in North Carolina, so the weather's pretty temperate, but we've been having some cloudy weather, and I feel for the people up north and Midwest right now getting hit hard. And on the east with that bad storm or mixture of storms that hit And we always do need to pay attention to sometimes how things are kind of, I wouldn't use the word manipulated or created, but wow, it does seem pretty strange that right around this election time, here we got Obama and Romney, here we got two storms coming together. We already know about the environment with chemtrails and all that up there in the air and how barometric pressures can be changed and manipulated, and you got this Frankenstorm they're talking about occur. So sometimes things are created and man-manipulated. Sometimes they are natural. But we know our body has the natural mechanisms to what enhance our immunity. We're not immune from anything. We have a defense mechanism system. So melatonin during the winter months is being circulated more. At nighttime, it's being circulated more to help the body to regenerate, to help the body be stimulated, to help the body fight agents that should not be there. So when animals are living out there in the cold, you know, they can't live in a house like us and open up a door and just close the door and turn on the heat. They're out there in the wild. So as they're out there in the wild and that melatonin is high, it's helping them to also deal with enhancing their health to deal with those outside environments. So when we as humans start hacking and coughing, and I feel pretty good to say that I haven't gotten ill this year. I didn't get ill last year. So I must be doing something right. I'm not putting my fingers up my nose, putting them where they shouldn't be. And guess what? That's when people start catching cold. I'd like to just emphasize the fact that you can have control over allowing the so-called cold or rhinovirus not to overtake your system and develop something like a flu. I really get discouraged when I hear some people say they're taking flu shots. Hey, that's your choice to do that, but you're actually injecting a virus into your system now, so-called producing immunity, so you don't get it if you ever get it. You might not get it, but you just injected things in your body that, in my opinion, viruses can have more impact on just doing that. They can have some adverse effects, and that's not something we want to look forward to. So on a natural level, melatonin is increased during the winter months to enhance our immunity. We also know that during the winter months, the sun may not be shining as much anymore. So we also don't get that other endocrine or that other like skin-derived hormone called sotriol, vitamin D. Sun's not shining, less vitamin D. So this past week, Monday, was kind of dreary. I was telling students in class that, you know what, it might be dreary outside, storms coming, but you know what, we can feel good inside. That is our bodies, inside our minds, to create the right chemical environment to keep us healthy. You can also create a chemical environment inside your body to make you unhealthy. So the day is now, what, 2 days later, past Monday, and now we have sunshine in certain places. Where I am, it's sunshine and sky blue and little clouds here and there, but now the outside looks good. Well, you can always control the inside of your body, but we can't control the outside. So the sotriol, or the vitamin D that we've been talking about, it can be enhanced during winter months taking certain food items, such as cod liver oil. That's why you have the grandmoms and the old school folks who gave their children the cod liver oil in the winter months. It was to enhance their immune systems to help them fight against viruses. Grandmom and grandpa may not have known about all the dynamics that we discussed today about the pineal gland, melatonin, the sun, and all that, but they knew that cod liver oil helped them to fight certain colds, no matter how nasty it was, but guess what? You still needed it. So if you enhance your body with the right thoughts, with the right chemical elements, you can maintain positive health throughout the year. Beyond the issue of this, these sun-derived hormones and these chemicals, you can enhance it with natural products, such as echinacea. Echinacea and golden seal root, sometimes you may feel something coming on. Take that, boost with some vitamin C. You can control all that's going on in your body by putting the natural things that your body needs. Echinacea is a natural plant. And vitamin C, ascorbic acid. You can't function in your body without ascorbic acid working. So if you start putting those elements in there, vitamin D, we just discussed that you can't live without vitamin D. Those who don't have enough vitamin D, they develop problems like rickets. Those rickets are bone deformity because they're not getting enough of vitamin D to help absorb that calcium to give you strong bones and teeth. So back to the milk story. We now have the issue where people are pushing milk in. We then have this real problem with company that starts with an M. I don't even want to say the name. Who knows? They might now start. So when people just saying a name, But they can now not tell you, don't have to tell you that they have bovine growth hormone in their milk. So for a company to be able to market products and not tell you that it's with bovine growth hormone in it, I think that is, in my opinion, deadly. Because you think about, if those in the audience never heard this, you can look at documentaries like The Food Incorporated, where it actually discusses and shows what happens to those cows that are injected. Some of them may have, you know, really big pustules because they're now getting more milk being generated, but their sacs can't hold all that, and animals get too heavy, and you have the whole issue of diseases like, I guess, like mad cow disease, these spongiform diseases that develop in these cows from this overproduction of the milk, and it's like, we don't pay attention. That manipulation of the science of what should be natural can create devastating impacts on our body. And for us to not really know the impact of bovine growth hormone in the long run on our bodies, that can be even more damaging. But the point is that during that time period is when, again, we discussed it earlier, the pasteurization of the milk to try to make it healthy for you, and also then to fortify it with things like vitamin D, it makes it sound like it's the ultimate in your health, but it's actually not. Even in some products now, like almond milk or soy products, as alternatives to milk, it's, vitamin D is also in some of those products, and I believe it's also naturally found in some of the soy products. So there's many ways we can consume vitamin D if we're not getting enough of it during the winter months. Those who have the money and can afford to go to warmer places during the wintertime so they don't succumb to diseases like or disorders like winter depression or seasonal affective disorder, they just go on down to the islands where the sun is more shining. And it's shining more and you feel better because that sun have a great impact on, again, your consciousness. That brings us all back to our melanin story. You know, we are people of light. We are people of beings that absorb everything that's around us. And the sun penetrates and makes our skin not just light up, but just absorb the radiances of life. So melanin becomes that very important conduit to allow all those chemical processes that we just discussed, such as the biosynthesis of melatonin from serotonin. Serotonin is made because there's an amino acid called tryptophan. Without tryptophan, you don't have the right chemical elements to make the hormones to make it for you to have for the rest of the day. So you now have a whole cascade of events that then depend upon a melanated system for it to be absorbed properly. Because we know white reflects, but the black absorbs. So as it takes in that light, it's causing the body to process things a whole lot differently. So then we start getting to the issue of extrasensory perception. You know, any hormone can have it, not any, but most steroid hormones can have organizational or activational effects. Organizational are usually more like permanent effects. Activational are more, they can change quickly. So if you look at the way sotriol, melatonin, and how they may work organizationally, they could help to entrain your biological rhythms. I mean, to not have your rhythms entrained properly, you're not going to sleep right. So that's very important to have that mechanism because you need rest. Without rest, guess what? You can also get sick. So if you're not resting, eating right, bad thoughts, guess what? Yes, you probably would succumb to a virus versus someone who has an alternative way of operating. The activational effects could include things like heightening your mood, increasing your alertness, and again, the issue of extrasensory perception. That's a pretty deep one. I don't know if we can even spend our time here on this discussion on extrasensory perception, but again, we're just dealing with the issue of these chemical elements are being circulated in our bodies naturally. One area of the brain I did not mention, but that's important in this cascade of events, is the suprachiasmatic nucleus. This is a region at the base of the brain, an area called the hypothalamus. Most scientists have looked at the suprachiasmatic nucleus, which is called the SCN. The SCN is the biological clock, because if this cellular group is disrupted, specifically in animals, their training, their rhythm is off, meaning that they may not have that day-night cycle operating properly. There'll be a shift in their cycle. blind people who may have a problem with certain areas of that SCN may even have some challenges with their sleeping, you know. So you now have another component of the brain that is the SCN that must operate properly before it even gets to the pineal gland. So our bodies are really constructed to do everything naturally. We just do everything to mess it up, staying up all night trying to do work rather than going to sleep at nighttime when the sun is going down. So we sometimes do a disservice to keeping our bodies in a healthy state. Do you have any questions from all of that?
Well, Dr. Moore, that was a wonderful, it was like a wonderful adventure. As you were talking, I was making all these pictures of all these different things, of which I was, I just wanted to comment. One of the things that I found that was an excellent substitute for using a liquid or a solvent in one's diet, which was, that's what milk really is being used for, is, again, go to the nuts and the seeds. And so seed nut milk, or especially almond milk, which now has become quite popular, is available. You can buy it in the same areas that people who used to buy cow's milk can also buy that alternative, and it works very well. It doesn't produce mucus. It's easily digestible because it's made out of almonds, which have a lot of nutritional properties that are really health enhancing. So again, almond milk is a fabulous substitute. I'm very concerned about the soy because, if you know, there's about 7 major plants that have definitely been totally genetically modified, such as sugar beet, which is where most commercial sweetness comes from, corn, kiwi, can you believe it, strawberries, and soy. So those foods are very interesting, and you need to approach them. I would recommend very cautiously because, you know, when has a strawberry usually come in contact with a fish. And so we know that, perhaps about 13, 14 years ago, they literally sliced in the gene from fish that's responsible for allowing fish to tolerate very cold temperatures so that strawberries literally could have at least 2 crops a year as opposed to their single spring crop. So many of these strawberries that are available now after August, et cetera, are literally genetically modified fruits. Kiwi, I'm still not clear as to why kiwi fruit would be genetically modified, and I'd have to look into the genetics of it, but most kiwi are GMOs. Soybeans definitely are GMO, and this is causing a problem because a lot of the seeds for animals are highly supplemented with soybeans, and they are genetically modified. So there is a very nice documentary that has been created about the effects of GMO foods on living tissue. And many of the farmers were testifying 8 or 9 years ago as to how the personalities and the behavior patterns of their animals drastically change when they begin to use GMO feeds.
What was the documentary? Do you remember?
Yes, I'll pull it up in just a moment. Yeah, right in the chat room in just a moment. It was amazing to watch how aggressive the pigs became. Very aggressive, very temperamental. The cows literally went into a depression. Many of them were just found dead, usually within 90 days of eating that. So many of the farmers had to choose to take the standard grain and feeds that were being offered to them, and they had to specifically request non-GMO feeds for their animals just to be able to have healthy animals to take them to market. So, again, all this information was repressed. As you know, cattle shouldn't even be eating corn. And so this was even much more devastating to the beef industry because even though the grasses are the most common plant on planet Earth, it's the grasses. There's almost, I don't know how many thousand species of grasses, which is why there were so many animals that literally did nothing but eat grass. They just ate grains. They grazed. They never ate any grains. And this is actually common for bovine species. They don't eat grains. They eat grass. And so with them having to make this modification in their diet forcibly, because now they were isolated and had limited range of grazing and still were expected to sustain their weight, they were fed foods that they had not tolerated for thousands of years. So we're moving the beef to grain, and then now also, as you know, they've been using the carcasses of other animals, other cows, to incorporate in the feed. You know, the beef has gone to a whole new level that nobody really understands the structure of any longer and the effect it will have on human tissue. And yet still most human beings are not recognizing that what is being sold to them as beef and fast food businesses, as well as in the stores, et cetera, is a whole different entity. And again, we know for a fact that when we change the molecular structure of what we ingest in the body has to adapt to that, and the adaptation then also brings changes in us, of which when we're not aware and do not comprehend how these changes are occurring and why, we immediately label the symptoms of this transformation as disease. Our medical profession does not have the science nor the data to identify these transformational changes, and therefore literally are mistreating a lot of disorders that have occurred because the body is transitioning from its standard default prototype into the unknown, literally. So when we have bacteria that are able to literally dissolve human tissue, okay, I mean, that's amazing. I mean, many of you are probably aware of the fact that, you know, there's a couple of patients that during the summer they had to have amputations, arms, legs, fingers, feet, to control a bacteria growth that no antibiotic could approach. So, again, you know, the news never really gave the full scientific background of what was going on in this lady's lives or these individuals' lives as to why they could have flesh-eating bacteria that could only be controlled by the actual amputation of segments of the body. But these are truly adaptational changes that the tissues are going through to attempt to accommodate a very aberrant, unknown food source that the tissues have to deal with and hopefully are able to extract the nutrients from. So this understanding of the hormonal interactions and these pertinent substances that are responsible for our ability to use energy in its natural state is very important. Now, you know, Dr. Moore, I would like for you to comment on this, but I again see melanin as the battery pack of the human body. And I still will state that at one point in time, and perhaps that is our future evolution, that we literally were complete solar energized, solar driven beings, that all of the reactions and all the mechanisms in our body literally were driven by this natural little battery pack, this natural little solar cell known as melanin. And I am of the position to perceive that the tissues literally only work at their most ideal capacity when they are receiving all of the electromagnetic spectrum directly from the solar cell known as melanin, the microtubule system, you know, all of these different mechanisms that we feel on a intracellular anatomical level really still don't comprehend the full activities of what mitochondria do in relationship to the endoplasmic reticula and the ribosomes, et cetera. We have some ideas, but we really don't understand that relative to the fact that all of these intracellular anatomical structures definitely rely on the presence of melanin to remain active and healthy. So what is your opinion and your understanding with your scientific accumulation of knowledge about the capacity for the melanin granule to be seen literally as a solar cell in human tissue, and that it directly is dependent on being able to absorb all of the known spectrums of the electromagnetic spectrum and probably more that we're not able to identify yet because of the limitation of our own instruments of measurement.
Right. Well, I guess the whole issue of, as we spoke about with the food, really, as it's been modified, it's compromised our immune systems. So as it's compromised the way that we can battle disease and bacteria, there's now more things we're more susceptible to because we're eating foods that have depleted the body of the natural nutrients that it needs to actually ward off certain illnesses. So melanin really may not change in terms of what it's constructed to do. We know it's a double-edged sword because as it absorbs and takes in to protect, in the long run, as it's absorbing, taking in, and protecting, it can now hold on and latch on to things that may not necessarily be good. So as a solar pack, as you were expressing, as a battery pack, as something that's generating energy, you've already spoke about the mitochondria. That's the powerhouse of the cell. So without having the biosynthetic properties of melanin, how it can function to act like a threshold switcher, you know, it can actually cause ionic movements to go quicker and faster because that's what it does as a battery pack, as an absorber of energy. It's helping the body to remain in a healthy state. That's why you have with this whole issue of melatonin. We didn't even talk about that. The big craze that went with melatonin in the past was this issue of the fountain of youth. And the Europeans said, oh, we found the fountain of youth, because they find one every other 2 weeks, I guess, or every other 3 months. And they found that the melatonin, hey, could be used as something to keep the body looking young. Well, kind of makes sense. At nighttime, if it's rolling at nighttime or being released at nighttime, it's helping the body, you know, to be regenerated, because that's what's happening at nighttime. Sleep should be for restorative energy. So melatonin being released at nighttime in conjunction with your melanin is doing whatever it can to fight off, ward off anything that should not be in there. So as a battery pack, again, at nighttime with the light on the outside that is from the sun not being generated enough, the body naturally will lighten the skin to allow whatever light to get in, and then the melatonin reaction will take care of business. That's why, you know, in Dark Matter, Dark Secrets, I call it, and talk about the psychoneuroendocrinology of sunlight and darkness. These things are happening naturally without us even thinking about it. What happens is when we now, again, put things in our body that should not be in there that we don't know anything about, it alters the internal milieu, which then can have an impact on how we normally can fight illnesses and diseases. And again, those who are, I guess you say, less melanated or less understanding of the importance of color and pigment, yeah, they probably will not last as long in terms of having a healthy life. So on the outside of our body, we look elastic and look fresh because of the melanin-melatonin interaction. Well, a lack of that will make your skin look much, much older than it should be. On the food level, those items that contain pigments, such as berries, fruits like that, they contain pigments which serve as what? Antioxidants. So you now have a whole natural process of antioxidant abilities with your melanin in your skin, and that's how we stay healthy. Inside and out, that is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you asked me about the sources for GMO food. So we're going to put that up in the chat room here. But there's a website, www.responsibletechnology.org/GMO-dangers, that make it very clear about what the process of creating a genetically modified organism is, and then how and what is the result of that relative to the human body. So this is something very interesting. This human insulin, insulins now that are being made, many of the insulins that people are taking, and they're not aware of it, are genetically modified as far as their structure. So this is something that people haven't So you made a very interesting statement, and I think that we should comment on that, that at nighttime, when melatonin is dominating the pituitary pineal hypophyseal axis, that a person stops making melanin, and so therefore the skin gets lighter?
No, actually what happens is, again, in your skin are cells that produce melanin. We call those cells in the skin melanocytes. So those melanocytes are like little nerve, they're like little brains, actually, little brain cells that can secrete chemicals. What's the chemical that secretes? Melanin. So the structure of a melanocyte almost looks like a neuron. So as the light shines and stimulates the granules, go up the arms, and now these granules, you know, stimulate the skin, because you know how it is when you sit out there in the sun and you get a little tan. That's the melanin being stimulated out of the cells called melanocytes. Or at nighttime, the melatonin retracts, that is, takes back, makes those granules go into the skin to lighten the skin to allow whatever light can get in to get in. So it's the melanocytes that the actual melatonin actually has an impact on.
Oh, okay. So the reason why you appear lighter then is because the expansion of the melanocyte, it literally folds in on itself, and so therefore more light is able to pass through the cell because the melatonin is not dispersed to actually capture the light. Is that correct?
Yeah. Rather saying fold or fold onto itself, if you have a straw and you like suck up some fluid in the straw, and you can now blow that fluid in and out and control that. So when I say retract, when you suck that fluid into the straw, that's retracting the fluid closer to you. So that's what's happening inside the arm of the melanocyte. It's retracting those granules like you're sucking a straw in, so that there's not a lot of it at the end of the straw or at the surface of the skin.
Okay.
So that's what we mean by retract. And that becomes very important because, again, naturally, you know, you need the sun. Without sun, there's no life. So at nighttime, you know, when we used to, you know, be out in the more open without our pants, without all these, you know, items we have to clothe us now, our bodies were in tune with the environment, especially living in a more equatorial region where you were able to live comfortably. The further away we moved from the equatorial region, a whole lot changed. Rather than just our physical makeup on the outside, internally we changed also. So people have talked about the pineal gland becoming calcified in certain people. Becoming calcified because they say it's become hard because it's not being used as it had been in the past. There are calcified pineals that can still produce melatonin, but I'm sure it will be limited. So we have the challenge of, again, moving away from an equatorial region where the sun is always shining to places that are further away. And you know those people who have seasonal affective disorder or winter depression, places like Alaska, Seattle, that's where you see it in high concentrations, because you're dealing with a place where the sun is really, you know, altered in terms of how it hits the earth and how the people there respond to it.
Okay, so this is important to get, so let's go back. So therefore, the reason why you appear, it's not that you really are getting lighter, you appear lighter because the light is going through the cell as opposed to being captured and reflected back to the eye when the melanin is fully dispersed throughout the cell.
Yeah, we can even not even put the eye into the contact. We just put the skin, because the skin really is the largest organ in the body. The skin is absorbing. Skin is taking in. The skin's responsive.
Right, so but I can only tell if you're light or dark if I have to put my eye on you. I've got to put my eye on you.
Okay.
So therefore, the reason why when I put my eye on you is the light is passing through. There's nothing bouncing back on my retina. So therefore, it appears as though obviously there's nothing there, or there's nothing bouncing back to the eye. So we really are dealing with a level of invisibility, as opposed to when the melanin granule is totally dispersed throughout the cell, it captures light and it actually reflects the frequency back to me, and that's what my eye sees, and that then is what determines the color. Is that right?
That's a way of looking at it.
Okay, well, say it a different way. I mean, I want to get this as many ways as possible. This is important because since people have made so many conclusions about what they think they see when they see skin color, they need to have a better understanding of what they really are seeing by understanding the mechanism of vision and melanin.
Yeah, right. Well, I think that whole importance of us on the Melanology Hour emphasizing the whole issue of pigmentation and melanin on the outside of the body, and the fact that we're all of the human race, not white, black, yellow, red people. We're colored people of the world. And in that context, it's the pigmentation that then becomes important, because any human being that then is not pigmented on the outside will have abnormalities, and the highest element of looking at that is an albino that lacks the melanin, and they then have physical abnormalities on multiple levels. So this importance of emphasizing, as you said, putting your eye on the skin or eye on the body, basically the eye also will not function right without a melanated back part of it. So if there's no pigmented cell layer in the eye, you are virtually blind. So the eye can, see certain things, and some people may have better visions than others because of their whole system may be more melanic or melanated to the point that it's absorbing certain frequencies that some people can't see.
Yeah, that's very interesting. We're finding that out that, you know, there's a night blindness in some individuals, and but still not corrected necessarily with vitamin A, and then we have the inability of what color blindness, supposedly that many men can't see certain colors.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting, greens and that kind of thing.
Yeah, red green color blindness is supposedly genetically connected, whereas in more men and women have the women have the XX. Men have the XY, so the woman have an extra compensate if there's a problem in the cells, in the DNA. So that's why you then may see more genetic abnormalities in men and women. And one of them would be, as you just said, the red-green color blindness or color blindness in men.
Right. And since you brought that up, now I think that's very interesting that, you know, if that'll be an interesting study to find out how many scientists, male scientists, have this color blindness allele in their DNA genome, and are they part of the field of science that basically is responsible for technologies that ignore or are quite invasive to the plant species on planet Earth, because in that they can't see green, you know, so grass means what to them? A green tree, what to them, et cetera. And so, therefore, you know, this innate ease upon which they can create the pesticides and the herbicides and do the genetic modification and cross-linking of very rare species of organisms together, do they have this deficiency where because they can't really process that frequency of light through the eye, the physical eye, perhaps, I don't know, is such thing since the skin also sees because it is an extension of the brain and of the pineal gland, does the color blindness also stick to the skin, so therefore they can't really appreciate the frequency of green and therefore can take much more liberty with interacting with these organisms that are green because they're not able to link in energetically with their full existence.
Right. That's an interesting concept. I would also want to kind of, I guess, reiterate something you said earlier about the eye and melatonin and nighttime. Because the melatonin does interact on the eye also. There's receptors for melatonin in multiple parts of the body.
Right.
And one of them is the eyeball. But I'm just saying at nighttime, pretty much you should be asleep. Eyes are closed. So it's not like light coming through the retina. But we do understand that there are different glasses that have an impact on people's moods. So there's light, there's glasses, there's color that has an impact on people who may be depressed, specifically women that may be pregnant, and they have shown studies that they can give them a certain like boost of certain kinds of light, and it changes their mood. That's why you have to put the sunglasses, and some people wear certain colored sunglasses. It has an impact, again, on their mood state.
Mm-hmm.
So light and eye, I'm not neglecting that that's important at nighttime. I'm just speaking about if you're asleep, eyes are closed, it's really your whole body is responding, not just that eyeball. But I hear you. You got your eye on me, I got my ears on you.
Funny. Okay, well, you know, Doc, this has been a fabulous show. It goes so fast. My goodness, it's almost time for us to go, everyone. I want to thank you for tuning in. And as usual, you know, the last Wednesday of every month, Dr. Moore and I will be here discussing all of the different facets and aspects of melanin that infuse biopolymer that is important for your life and very necessary for you to thrive in the 21st century. Please tune in and make sure that you listen on Fridays. Music for the mind of a scientist. The music is affecting us in so many different ways. You do want to understand the science behind what you are hearing with our master maestro, Mr. Maurice Thompson. I'm back on Monday with the Doctoral Balancing Show, and I tell you the neuroanatomy and what we're discovering about the brain relative to sacred geometry is phenomenal. Tune in, and I'll be back on Wednesday with the Dr. Jewel Show, and of course, the diamond light grid of the body is so important. It accentuates the effects of melanin, and it also ensures that the electromagnetic frequency is stabilized and moving through its own grid meridians in the body. Tune into the Diamond Light Show, which will be up to me on Tuesday. So, Dr. Moore, what can we look for next month? What are we going to talk about? Oh, you know, I know we are going to have a special guest, Dr. Nina G. Jambrowski, who's written a very interesting book, Living Color and Skin, the History of Skin. Very interesting. And she's from the University of Pennsylvania. And she's going to be sharing with us her recent writings on the whole history of Hi, everybody. Thank you. Yes, you got the book. Bye-bye.
Schedule, additional information, and to purchase products, please visit our website at www.thejewelnetwork.net. If you'd like to reach us, please send an email to info@thejewelnetwork.net.